97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Good morning. Happy Friday to all of you. Welcome into the Mark Cox Morning Show. I'm Kim St. Ange. I'm filling in for Mark today and Monday. He'll be back on Tuesday, just taking some time off with his family. So in the meantime, Scott Jagow filling in for me.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm glad you're here. Carl, of course, here. Trent is in for Sue. And you may have noticed that we are back on Facebook. We did our hard time in Facebook jail. We did not learn our lesson. And we are seeing that quite a few people have enjoyed watching us there again and commenting this morning, because we went to Rumble after we went to Facebook jail, and we're staying on Rumble. So you'll have that option as well. The number of people like to watch on X. Maybe you're listening to us on the radio or the Odyssey app. By the way, if you listen to us on the Odyssey app, because I know some people have told me that, you know, they're busy in the morning, they're running around, so they actually listen to the podcast, because we podcast the whole show later on in the day. You can leave a little an audio message. There's a little microphone next to the button that says listen live, and you can up to 60 seconds. So whatever's on your mind, keep it clean, but you can leave us a message and we'll hopefully play it on the air. I want to update you guys on this whole Milton situation, because there's been different numbers coming out on the death toll. I've heard this morning at least 14. That was what NBC News reporting, 14 people dead. And then we were talking to Tanya J. Powers earlier this morning from Fox News Radio, and she was saying that she had heard the death toll was between 8 and 12.
No, it's the latest reports confirmed 14.
That's what I had seen.
Yeah.
And I know about 2.5 million people are still without power. Now, obviously, any life lost is sad, but this could have been so much worse. I mean, they were expecting this to be, well, they were initially thinking this could be a Category 5, and it ended up being downgraded, thankfully, when it made landfall to Category 3.
Which is still a really strong storm. Have you ever been in a hurricane?
We ran away from one last year. What hurricane was that, Carl? I'm trying to remember.
Oh, yeah. Was it in Georgia or... Where were you?
We were in North Carolina.
Oh, North Carolina, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, North Carolina gets a lot of them, obviously. And I used to work there, so
I've been in a few.
Not even a Category 3. I mean, a Category 2, and it is serious business. Category 5, forget it. I mean, you cannot be in a Category 5 storm.
Right. They were saying it was unsurvivable.
Right.
It's just crazy. I feel so bad for all those people who have been hit, in some cases, twice back-to-back from Helene, now Milton. You see that Lieutenant Dan guy, as they've dubbed him, who rode out the storm in a sailboat?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Survived. They interview him after. He's like, yep, I'm smoking and I feel good. I rode out the storm.
Yeah, I know some people who rode it out in St. Petersburg. They live in a condo building that's pretty secure against hurricanes. But down the street from where they live, the roof came off the Tampa Bay Rays Stadium.
Yes.
So
I got a text message from somebody who lives in Tampa, and they said, now the city of Tampa is, and the Rays and the city of St. Pete, are in an unenviable position of having to put a new roof on the building that they're going to tear down in a few years when they have to build a new ballpark.
Oh,
yeah, because if you've never been there, it is a terrible stadium. It's the worst in Major League Baseball. So the roof coming off is probably a good thing, but
they're going to have to build a new stadium.
Jeez, and how much is that going to cost? I mean, there's obviously a lot of damage. I saw some crazy video of these homes that looked like they were swallowed up, and it's sad. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of time spent trying to rebuild. Still to come here at the bottom of the hour, we have a local couple. They go around to Catholic churches in the St. Louis area, and they have a very unique perspective on what Amendment 3 will do if it passes. Of course, that is the abortion amendment. So again, that's coming up at the bottom of the hour. Carl, right now, let's get to our shortlist.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
You see, that's the real threat to democracy, stupid people. That's the threat. Our biggest threat to democracy is stupid people.
You know, not everyone likes what Trump has to say sometimes, and I would actually fall into that camp. Sometimes I'm like, can you just not say that? But I don't know if you can argue with his point on this one.
Their vote, no matter what state they're in, matters.
So that's something that you and Vice President Harris disagree on?
I have spoken about it in the past, that she's been very clear on this, and the campaign, and my position is the campaign's position.
Well, there he is, our pal Tampon Tim, Tim Walz, trying to walk back his comment saying that we need to get rid of the Electoral College, and ABC's Michael Strahan questioning him on that, which I actually appreciated.
Former President Trump, get a life, man. Help these people.
Will you hold them accountable? You said you were going to hold those accountable.
Public will hold them accountable.
You better impress Holden McCown because you know the truth.
Well, that's a scary thought. We know that the media already tries to do that, fact-checking every single thing that Trump says. Biden trying to make the claim that Trump's not done enough to help the people affected by these two hurricanes. Give me a break. He's housing 200 linemen in one of his hotels. He's raised millions of dollars. That's a joke.
We have not yet seen the same kinds of energy and turnout in all quarters of our neighborhoods and communities as we...
Oh, that's never good. Barack Obama is campaigning for Kamala Harris in Pittsburgh, and he ends up making a surprise stop at a Pittsburgh campaign field office. And he's talking to this small group of men, specifically black men, and he's trying to encourage them. You got to vote for Harris. But did you hear what he said there? It's kind of hard because he wasn't mic'd up, but he basically is saying that support among black men for Kamala Harris, it's dwindling. He's like, it's just people are not as excited about her as they were when I was running for president. And he's right. The polls show that it's not there, that a lot of those people have actually moved over to the Trump campaign and said, I'm going to back him. But we know the left is all about identity politics, right? If it's a woman, that's enough of a reason for some people to want to vote for Kamala Harris, which is pathetic. OK, I would support a woman being president if I feel she is the best person for the job, not simply because she's a woman. Same with a man. I don't care what gender you are, what skin color you have. But Obama goes on to say that people need to vote, that black men specifically need to vote for Harris because she, quote, understands the struggles and pain and joy that comes from those experiences. I think the black population is probably a little bit fed up. They feel like they've heard a lot of this. You know,
well, that sounds very simplistic and unsophisticated.
Yeah.
Not giving a lot of credit to people saying, oh, you have to vote this way because of her skin color, essentially, is what it sounds like.
That's absolutely. And they're he's saying, well, I think that your hesitation is because she's a woman. You don't feel like we should have a woman as president. And he says, I think you're coming up with other alternatives and other reasons for that. But that's actually the reason you don't want to vote for her. How about that? They've been promising all of these things to the black community. The Democrats have for years, and not a lot of it's been delivered. And I think people are finally waking up to that and seeing that it's empty promises.
Or there's also probably a significant amount of those people who don't like her liberal policies.
Also that, maybe. Yeah. That certainly could be it. So anyway, Obama had a lot of words. He was trying to take credit for the economy that Trump had. He's like, you know why it was a good economy? Because I left it for him. That was why. I would beg to differ, Mr. Obama. All right. When we come back, we're going to be speaking with a foreign policy expert from the Heritage Foundation. You know, we've heard a lot about this plan for Israel to retaliate against Iran. What could that look like? When could that happen? Plus, I heard this morning driving into work that Vladimir Putin is going to be meeting with some Iranian leaders. We'll be right back. I'm Kim St. Ange in for Mark Cox.
He was a security guard for the CIA before he came to the U.S. and then he passed two rounds of vetting. Does the administration believe there was adequate vetting?
So what I can say is I cannot comment on this directly.
You hear that? That's Karine Jean-Pierre's comment. When somebody asked her about this Afghan national who was arrested earlier this week, accused of plotting an ISIS-inspired Election Day terror attack, that was her comment. What I can say is, I can't say anything. You got all that word salad?
Yeah.
She's starting to sound more like Kamala Harris.
Or the other way around.
She should have said,
Kamala Harris.
She should have said, I grew up in a middle class family.
Yeah.
That would have been enough of a response because right. We're used to that at this point, right? That would just cover all the bases. Well, anyway, just to kind of get you up to speed on what happened, if you're not familiar with this story, there was this 27-year-old. He was arrested in Oklahoma on Monday again for this alleged terror plot. Well, the newest information we have now, and this is crazy, it turns out he was employed as a security guard for the CIA. The CIA. He came over here in September of 2021. That would have been, of course, under Biden and Harris, their administration. And the question is, what did they know about him? What was the vetting process like to get him here? He brought his family over here and they handed out all these visas. In fact, this article that I found said the visas were doled out to more than 70,000 Afghans by the Biden-Harris administration after that botched withdrawal from Afghanistan. His family was among them. Was he radicalized before? Was he radicalized after?
Well, people were asking, reporters were asking those questions, and the Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas wouldn't answer, and Corinne Jean-Pierre wouldn't answer. So we're left wondering what happened. And it's just amazing that it's the CIA hiring a security person, and they didn't do their proper vetting.
Why was the guy who has a visa, why was he even hired to work for the CIA?
Right.
I'm sorry, but of all the jobs you should be hired for, that is not one of them. That is dangerous territory, in my opinion. And this is what can happen. I mean, think if they had not caught this guy. He had already been going out. He was, I guess, buying AK-47s, and he liquidated his family's assets. And he even bought one-way tickets for his wife and child to travel home to Afghanistan. He said that he had planned to die in this attack. He, you know, thought he'd be a martyr. That is so scary. And then to your point, when Alejandro Mayorkas was asked yesterday during the daily press briefing about this, he couldn't even verify that everything would be secured. I want to get to our guest right now, and that is Daniel Flesch. He is a foreign policy expert with the Heritage Foundation. I've got to ask more about this whole situation, Daniel. This whole guy that's Afghan national that now it turns out he worked for the CIA. What is going on? Because, whoop, did we lose him?
It seems we just did.
I heard the boop. Okay, well, we'll try to connect back with him. But yeah, I think there's a lot of questions that should be answered. And what was really frustrating, too, about all of this was that they won't answer anything. They won't address it. Do we get him back? Looks like we have him back. All right, Daniel, can you hear us?
Hi, Kim. Yes, I'm here.
Hey, thanks for giving us some time this morning. We were just talking about this situation with this Afghan national who came over here in 2021. Turns out now he worked as a security guard for the CIA, and the Biden administration really has nothing to say about it. What's the latest? Do you know much about that whole situation?
It's certainly, you know, it's an ongoing developing story. I'm not too familiar, but I think it's certainly part of a broader trend we're seeing of people coming into this country, and we're not basically keeping tabs on them. You know, on the southern border, we know the millions of people who've come in, including those who are not from Latin America. There are terrorist organizations that have been trying to infiltrate our country through the southern border, successfully, mind you. And so if they're now able to integrate into our institutions, into security positions, frankly, that's unsurprising, but it certainly is dangerous and scary.
Yeah, you wonder how much they're vetting anybody who's coming across our border. I have to ask you about this whole Israel situation, because we know that Netanyahu has said absolutely Israel is going to retaliate against Iran, but we don't know when or what that might look like, right?
Correct. And that's obviously a very closely guarded secret. But we do know a few things. First off, Iran presents at least four different targets that Israel and the United States potentially could strike at. That includes, most importantly, perhaps its nuclear facilities, also energy sites such as its energy production, oil production and refineries, military bases, as well as targeting the regime itself. The last few days, the Biden administration and Prime Minister Netanyahu and his team have been discussing what a response will look like. And at the end of the day, we have to realize that Iran started the war on October 7th. Certainly it was Hamas, but it's Iran that has been supporting Hamas, supporting Hezbollah, supporting the Houthis in Yemen, supporting all of these radical Shia and Sunni organizations in attacking Israel and our allies and partners, including the United States as well, across the Middle East. Iran is the root of the problem. And with Israel being able to turn the tables on Hezbollah in the last 2 months, on effectively defeating Hamas in Gaza, now is the opportunity to really strike at Iran and really rid the world and the region of the scourge forever. So there's a lot of opportunities on the table, but it remains to be seen what, you know, the Biden administration will allow Israel to do to an extent.
We have about a minute left, but I wanted to get your take on this, because speaking of Iran, I hear this morning driving in that Vladimir Putin's going to be meeting with Iranian leaders. Do we know what that has to do with?
This is also very unsurprising, because in the last few years, really since Putin invaded or really continued its invasion of Ukraine, Iran has been supplying Russia with many suicide and other drones to use in its war against Ukraine. And also, Russia has recently set up its own drone production facility based on Iranian models. So there's a growing alliance even between Russia, Iran, and obviously you could bring China into that. This is a growing axis that we in the United States need to be very wary of and realize that they're not driven by common interests, but rather by common objectives and enemies, which is really pushing against the U.S. and the Western liberal order. So certainly, this is not a good sign for us. It's not unsurprising that they're meeting, but we'll see what comes out of it.
Yep, we'll be watching. All right, Daniel Flesch, foreign policy expert among many things with the Heritage Foundation. Hey, thanks for giving us some time this morning.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're speaking with a local couple, and they go around to Catholic churches across the St. Louis area. They have this very unique perspective on what Amendment 3, talking about abortion, will do here in the state if it passes. I'm Kim St. Ange, in for Mark Cox. You know, Mark and I have talked a lot about Amendment 3 that will be up for a vote here in Missouri come November. That, of course, is the amendment that relates to abortion, and essentially it would allow abortion up until birth. Now, when you go to vote, you're going to read there on the amendment that it will say, oh, you know, up to viability. And that might trick some people. But it's intentionally vague, and it talks about how if the mother's health, whether that be physical or mental health, is potentially in jeopardy, that they could justify an abortion basically at any time. So that would mean full-term abortions. That is dangerous, and that's why we've been passionate about spreading that message to vote no on Amendment 3. So joining us now is a couple, a local couple, who goes around speaking to local churches because they have a really unique perspective on what Amendment 3 will do here in Missouri if it passes. So Linda and Chuck Raymond, good morning to you both.
Thank you so much, Kim. This is Linda.
Hi, Kim. Thanks for having us.
Linda, share with me the story that brought you guys to the point where you're at now, going around to these churches and speaking about this.
Okay, great. Kim, I want to thank 97.1 for their unique perspective on this amendment and the stance for pro-life. Our perspective comes from a place of been there, done that. We have been wounded by an abortion many years ago, and we want to get out there and spread the word that this is not the right thing for women, families, men. It wounds everyone. So we go out. Chuck and I have been asked to come to several different parishes in the Archdiocese to speak about Amendment 3 to inform the voters more about what this amendment says and does and what will happen if it passes. So our story starts back in 1976. Yes, we are pretty old here. And just as teenagers, we were faced with an unplanned pregnancy. And we had a moment of just temporary insanity. We were all sucked into the lie of abortion, how Planned Parenthood told us, you know, oh, you can come in, it's a blob of tissue, we can take care of it in just one problem, in one visit, and get on with your life. So our parents felt like at that time it was being misguided, misinformed, that the abortion was the answer. So we did go through with it. Very difficult to have gone through it. And then I ended up suffering through many years of shame, guilt, remorse, had to see several different therapists and just be on different medications just to help myself to function daily and to be able to sleep at night. It was absolutely a horrific experience, knowing that I permitted the literal murder of my child through dismemberment of that child in my womb.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry you went through that. What was that like for you, Chuck, as the guy? Because so often you have women who are very, very, you know, the pro-choice, I would say pro-abortion stance, who feel like men shouldn't even have a say in this if the baby lives or dies.
Yeah, no, thank you. Obviously, for every, you know, pregnant woman, there's a father. The partner is the father. I was there. I was 17 years old. Linda was 18. And, you know, candidly, we were scared to death. We were frightened, shameful. And, you know, I was in high school. She was in college, and we didn't know what to do. And unfortunately, we didn't get good guidance. And in the relative, secrecy, the culture of the day in the 70s was that abortion was this safe, legal, simple way to solve a problem. And, you know, that's what we ended up doing, you know, with prompting of our parents. And it just frightens me that this amendment may put us right back to where we were in the 70s. If it wasn't legal, so readily available, there was, 6 to 8 abortion clinics in town. There's no way that we would have quickly and shamefully and quietly destroyed our own child without without having an opportunity to, carefully consider, what other options that we had. So it's been,
I was going to say, Linda, I'm curious to get to hear more, I guess, about what the response is when you and Chuck go around to these churches and talk to these people there, because obviously you were saying that your parents basically forced you into getting this abortion when you were both teenagers, and that this led to a lot of trauma, understandably. And I would say that whether you want the abortion or not, there's going to be trauma that comes from that. But surely you've probably talked to people, maybe who even would call themselves devout Christians, and they say, well, I wanted the abortion and I don't regret it. What do you say to those people?
Yeah. When we travel around to the churches, obviously we've been invited to come, so we feel like we're kind of singing to the choir. However, in one in particular, one of our talks recently, there are tears flowing, and some of these people are probably in their 70s and 80s, that there is widespread, thankfulness for us to come from our perspective to speak with them. And also to just then they get more interested in learning about Amendment 3 and what all it's going to entail. And there are people out there that kind of like, and I want to call it cafeteria Catholics or Christians that have one set of beliefs that follow Christianity, and then the rest, they'll pick and choose the things that they don't want to do, or they're going to say they're pro-choice, and it just doesn't fit the Christian part of their personality.
Well, so. And we know the people who wrote Amendment 3, they intentionally wrote it in a very vague way that opens the door to a lot of things. But Chuck, I guess I'll ask this question to you. What's your biggest concern if this should pass in Missouri in November?
Yeah, it scares me to death, Kim. I'm afraid that we're going to go back to that dark period in the 70s where there was not ultrasound that was required to be shown to a woman. There was no waiting period. If we would have had a mandatory waiting period to just have a chance to think and pray about what we were doing and what our options might be, then we may have chosen something different. I think women would be at significant risk. The language of that amendment is insidious. It actually doesn't even require a medical doctor to perform the abortion. So that means, nurses, pharmacists, assistants, anybody would legally be able to perform an abortion. It invalidates over 60 laws that Missourians had put into place to help provide health care regulations to abortion clinics, parental notification, so our teenage daughters and granddaughters can't just go get an abortion secretly without parents knowing about it. It takes away the liability. It actually removes any protection that a woman would have from any harm that's done to her during an abortion, because the legal profession or the healthcare professionals, quote, are not required to be held liable for their actions.
Right.
It's really scary.
Well, and I would say even if there's somebody who would call themselves, well, in favor of abortion, I guess, pro-choice as they would probably call themselves, I would say there's enough in this bill as it relates to potential gender reassignment surgeries for minors that you should vote no, that you shouldn't support this. And I think that's also just something that I've made an effort to really point out to people, that this is so much bigger than just them trying to say, oh, it's an abortion, that the doctor and the woman, they're going to make this decision together and it's going to be safe. I mean, this is just so much more than that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it opens the door to taxpayer funding of abortions. The wording saying that it allow abortion for really any physical or mental health care reasons, that really even allows post-viability, extreme late-term abortions to occur when the baby in the womb can feel pain. And obviously that's a traumatic experience for mothers and fathers as well.
Right. And you hear this lie that it's, safe, legal, and rare. Well, it's not safe because it ends in the death of an innocent baby. And it's not rare. I mean, this is happening way more than people want to admit. And I'm curious to get your take on this, Linda, because I as a woman, I've spoken out about this. I used to call myself pro-choice, and now I'm very pro-life. And I've had people say, when I tell them that's my stance, they say, well, stop trying to push your religious beliefs on me. If you want to make that decision, that's fine. But who are you to tell me what to do with my body? How do you respond? Because there might be people listening right now who have family members or friends who are in that boat, and they don't even know how to talk to him about this.
Okay, that's so spot on. That I get frustrated about that one, too. I think for people to say no to abortion and women that are trying to make that decision, they need to know exactly what abortion is. Like you said, I love the way that you phrase that. It's a safe, rare, and legal. No, it's not safe. It ends in the death of a child and the permanent wounding of a mother. I could share my story from the rooftops if I could. About how this wounded myself and my dear husband and had a ripple effect on our family for many, many years to come. So you just need to be informed about what abortion is and what it does to you on a long-term perspective.
Absolutely. Well, Chuck and Linda Raymond, thanks so much for being brave enough to share your story, to go speak to these churches across the St. Louis area, and just how active you are in the pro-life movement.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Cam. Again, thanks for keeping this on the agenda. I would just urge everybody to, whether you're pro-life or pro-choice, to read the actual language of the amendment and just be informed, especially whether you would vote yes or no. Just know exactly what this amendment's going to do to be enshrined in our Constitution. And we just pray for guidance on our votes.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Thank you both again. And I think they're spot on. And I know there's events being held at churches across the area, including Zion Lutheran in my neck of the woods. And I can give you more details on that. But we have to be praying about this and talking about it and sharing what this will do here in Missouri with people who are on the fence about it, because this is not just a bill they're trying to pass. This would enshrine it into our state constitution. This is huge. Vote no on Amendment 3. We're back after this.
Not Kim on a whim, but Scott on the spot.
Scott on the spot is proudly brought to you by Missouri Brush Control. Enjoy your land the way you've always dreamed of. Visit MissouriBrushControl.com.
Thank you, Bo. It is great to be here, Scott on the spot. And you know what? I was prompted by something Carl said earlier about his first show, because we've been playing Hall & Oates all morning because it's Hall's birthday.
Daryl Hall.
Yes. Who I've learned now is 78, not in his 50s like 50. I guessed.
Kim thought that Daryl Hall was younger than I was.
But let the record show that I did know that Daryl Hall was of Hall & Oates, and I even knew his song. So give credit where credit is due.
Did I not give you lots of credit?
You did.
Today?
I'm just reiterating it on the air.
Okay.
So the internet is a glorious thing, and you can look up just about any concert that's ever happened. So I know for a fact that your first concert experience was November 12th, 1984.
Yes.
At the arena.
Yes.
And that mine was in Greensboro, North Carolina on November 1st, 1984. So 10 days before.
Good for you.
In the Greensboro arena, it was Billy Squire and Rat.
Never heard of them.
Never heard of either one.
Wow.
Nope.
Billy Squire had, what was his?
Everybody Wants You, The Stroke.
Everybody, yeah.
Wait, Stroke. Everybody Wants That Song?
That's Billy Squire.
Oh, okay.
And The Stroke.
And then
Stroke.
Rat did Round and Round.
Yeah.
How's that? Can you sing it round for me?
See, the problem is we're back on Facebook, and now if we play music, we get in trouble for it?
Yeah.
Mark won't mind if we go in Facebook jail again, right?
Again? Yeah,
After a month?
But our bosses will. All right, hang on.
So, Kim, what
so
was your first?
This is Round and Round.
Oh. Yeah.
Are you looking at me like you're waiting to see if I'm going to say, oh, yeah, I know that one. No, never heard of it.
Never heard that song. It was a big hit back then.
Here's the hook.
I barely squeaked into the 80s.
So that was my first concert. Kim, what was yours?
I don't know. I don't remember specifically, but I do know that my parents took us to the Beach Boys, and it was at Hollywood Casino Amphitheater, which would have been called what? Riverport
at the time.
At the time. And they threw a beach ball around in the audience. And I remember as a kid thinking that was really cool, getting to, you'd wait to hope that you'd be the one to touch the beach ball to throw it to somebody else.
And that was the Mike Love Beach Boys. Boo.
Yeah.
I remember being a fantastic concert as a kid. Well,
I mean, sorry.
Brian Wilson.
Dennis had passed by then.
Right.
I'm not a big concert
Brian
goer.
Wilson.
Brian Wilson's great.
Yeah. I mean, his, California Girls... the song, mm-hmm. was based on a Bach composition. That's where he got it from.
Bach.
Yeah.
I thought you said
Johann
Bach.
Sebastian.
Bach.
Bach as in
Johann Sebastian Bach.
Yes. But I was kind of surprised that the beginning with the organ and that song,
dude.
He got it from Bach. And he studied classical music. And the Beach Boys, to me, are way underrated as a band. I mean, they're an incredible. Their music, Pet Sounds, is one of the best albums ever made.
Of course, Mark only has the California Girls from David Lee Roth. Well,
yeah.
But still, yeah, it's still this part.
Yeah, this part. And it's just kind of a random thing.
We had our company happy hour the other day, well, earlier this week, and I was talking to, I think he's the marketing manager, maybe David from Brown & Brown, and he was saying he travels all around the country. I mean, he'll go to sometimes, I think he said a couple concerts in one day.
Wow.
He is the epitome of someone who is going to follow a band around if he likes them. And I'm just so not that person. I would maybe pay $150 max for a ticket, even if I really love the band. Like, I saw Phil Wickham, who's a Christian artist. Mm-hmm. I saw him with my sisters in Springfield. The tickets were not even $100, and it was a fantastic concert. But then he came to St. Louis with Brandon Lake, and I love Brandon Lake, but I just couldn't see myself forking.
Went.
I just went. But my sisters went to the second concert, and they said it was amazing. It was sold out at the Enterprise Center, right?
This is, yes.
But I just couldn't see. Okay, I know the song. Couldn't see
Billy
myself
Squire.
Paying.
Yeah.
Mark doesn't have any of the Christian artists in there.
No, I'm not surprised. Yeah. I don't think he's a big Phil Wickham fan.
You probably don't know this one. This is a St. Louis classic rock hit.
Yeah, but I barely squeaked into the 80s.
Right.
I was born in 89, so I'm not going to know a lot of these songs.
Sorry, everyone on Facebook. You can't hear these. Sorry.
Anyway. At least we're back on Facebook, okay?
Yeah.
Let's celebrate the win there.
Most of the shows I go to see these days don't cost much because they're bands that I know, but they're not huge mainstream bands. So like the old 97s, I have seen them probably 8 times. And every time I only have to pay like $30. They're a great live band. Sunvolt, I go see them. They're a local band from Belleville. Wilco, those kind of guys. You're not having to pay $150 to go see those concerts. I agree with you. I mean, it's rare that I'm going to outlay that much money to go see a mainstream artist.
But you saw.
But I do.
You've seen all the artists. You probably want to see.
True. That's,
but
that's true.
But what's cool is you're maybe paying $30 for the ticket now, but some of those same bands might make it big, and then you would have to fork over $100+. Just like Nashville. I've lived in Nashville for, well, just shy of 4 years, and you'd go to a karaoke night, and the singers were fantastic. I would never go. I did karaoke one night, but I went to a place where people were intentionally, like, it wasn't great. Because any other place in Nashville, they're professional singers who are, you know, pretending
out
like, oh, I
town.
Better go try to sing this song, and then it sounds absolutely fantastic.
And you'll find out that they wrote it.
And yeah, and they play like 10 instruments, and they probably sing it in multiple languages. Yeah. All right, when we come back, hey, we get bonus Griff coming up at 8:20. He's going to update us on the situation with Hurricane Helene and Milton. We'll be right back. One more hour to go in the Mark Cox Morning Show.
Get more at 971talk.com.